Hello and welcome. My name is Meshack Malley, and this is the first ever episode of my podcast. I recorded it last summer with my sister. It has taken me nearly 6 months to get it ready to share with you here today. However, I am very excited about it, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. I know I look a little different in the video, so I just wanted to clarify any potential miscommunication. Enjoy.
My name is Meshack Malley. Today on the show, we have a great guest, a great friend, and my sister, Edith Anna.
Hello.
This is weird.
Yeah, a little weird.
So this is new. This is a new show, and I really wanted to have you on the first episode.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yes, and I think part of the reason why I wanted to start this show actually spawned from the conversations that we have when we're both at our respective schools. And I find myself in a position where I want to call you or I want to talk to you. And you always have like great insights and great things to talk about and great things to say. And it just inspired me. I was like, hey, I want to make a podcast and I want you to be on episode one.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. I love our conversations as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So why don't we just like pick up where we left off in terms of, we were talking about a couple days ago, the cancel culture movement, and we were talking about sort of how this is affecting everything and the complexities of the world.
Right.
And I've been thinking a lot about that. I've been thinking a lot about like, what does that mean? And what does that mean for like artists and creators and people that are maybe in the spotlight in the way that we are, or trying to be, or what I'm trying to do in creating this, and what all of that means.
Right. So, like, we were talking about how there's no room for mistake, no room for really anything that isn't considered exactly right and exactly, you know, politically correct. But as artists, we're supposed to be able to go outside of that. Mm-hmm. It's about being able to question everything. And, being able to, say, I think maybe this doesn't work. And how are you able to question that if you're getting canceled whenever you do it?
And you see, so you go to a slightly more liberal school than I do.
I go to one of the most liberal schools.
And how do you see the cancel culture movement, or the rise of the cancel culture movement, or whatever we want to call it, this like sort of censorship of like viewpoints and ideas, like how do you see that manifesting on your campus among your peers?
So it's been really, really frustrating for me. I just finished up my first year there. And one of the main things is that there's just no room for anything except for their leftist, socialist kind of viewpoint. Mm-hmm. And whenever there's a slightly more conservative student or something, and in a class, if they say something that the majority of students disagree with, they're immediately shut down. There's just no room for them to have anything, any sort of say whatsoever. Even like people who are still really liberal will get shut down for their views if they're even slightly going against what the mainstream of the school does. So like there was a post, I saw someone post during COVID, and it was about, if you don't wear masks, you're a horrible person.
Okay.
If you don't wear masks, like, inside, outside, whatever, you have to wear them all the time. If you don't, you're a horrible human, you're killing people, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, how are you supposed to say that when there's so many things going around about whether or not they're effective, and if you should be wearing them indoors or outdoors? There was just no understanding that other people may have different information than you, and that their viewpoint is still valid, and like they're trying to understand what's going on.
Do you see, so one of the things that I feel like I've noticed in these environments, and like particularly in academic settings, and it's not with professors, it's with other students, where like you're not allowed to, it's not like disagree with, but you're not allowed to question. You're not allowed to like ask the question why, when something is brought up. Like, for whatever reason, that question is, like, deemed as, like, you hate everything, you're this terrible human being for even asking why this is important, or why we should be doing this, or focusing on it.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that some. It depends with the professor. I've had some professors at my school have been really good about, like, trying to really explain and give both sides of an argument and all that and answer why things are the way they are. But, yeah, I've definitely seen that when people ask why, they're like, no. No, you should know. You should understand what's going on. It is on you to understand. You have to know all of this.
But, like, this is the point where you're trying to make the understanding.
Right, exactly. You're in an academic setting. You're trying to... You're asking the question, why? You're trying to understand, and you're trying to get a conversation going, and no one is letting you.
Yeah, you're just being shut down. I was thinking a lot the last year. There's sort of been this rise... And maybe it's not a rise, maybe it's just what I've been seeing in my feed, where there's like more and more what I would call like Instagram activism. Have you seen these? Where like,
oh yeah, where like definitely.
People's like Instagrams have become full, it's usually the stories, mm-hmm. where they like become full of like these repostings of what often are just like super simplified views on complicated concepts.
Right.
And it's like, if you don't agree with this, you are X, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And the thing that I keep seeing out of all of this is like, or the thing that I've been thinking about is like, I just genuinely don't believe that any of that's effective. Yeah. Not only because it's sort of reductionist in terms of what you're actually talking about, and it's just like breaking down these like complicated concepts into like these chunks that are like, well, maybe true on, like, some level. They're also, like, severely oversimplified. Also, like, who are the people that you're following on Instagram? I don't know if you thought about this.
No,
like, I have. Like, who are the people that you're following where you're like, okay, so it's probably your friends who probably have the same political leanings that you do. Maybe it's some family members that maybe they don't. But they're not going to be, like, convinced. If there's anyone that you're following or is following you that doesn't have the same political leanings, they are, you know, it's because they like you, or and they're genuinely, like, you're not educating anyone on, like, what's actually happening by right. doing this. And if anything, you're just ostracizing people.
Yeah, no, I feel that, because I've done the thing where I've gotten into the loophole of reposting the posts and, like, oh, I think I'm really doing something good, I'm making right. a difference. But when I actually sat down and thought about it, I was like, well, I'm reposting the things that I see my friends posting, and then they're seeing what I'm posting, and it's just becoming a circle. It's not going anywhere.
Right.
And nothing is going to change anyone's mind. It's just, yeah, you're becoming in a, what's the word?
Like a bubble?
An echo chamber.
An echo chamber.
It's just becoming an echo chamber of very simplistic ideas that are just going around and around, and then that becomes in your mind the truth, and you can't see anything outside of that.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like, if you repeat something long enough, then it becomes true.
Right.
And like facts don't, you know, like, and that's true for both sides, and it's true on everything, and like, everyone is guilty of this, where like, no matter what, you know, no matter what perspective you have, that the narrative that you're being fed is what you believe is true.
Yeah.
And that's true 100% of the time. I know people that, like, during the pandemic, they would become so anxious and nervous.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of people I knew that, like, would become so anxious and nervous. I didn't find myself particularly anxious and nervous. I was, like, frustrated, a little depressed, like, but not, like, worried in the same way that some of my peers were worried.
Right.
And I spent one evening and I watched like the CNN hour from like 7 p.m. to like 10 p.m. And it was like three different hour long talk show hosts. And they're literally, it's like, because it's like during the pandemic, right? They're shooting it in their house. So it's like just their face for an hour talking. And what I noticed in that is just the amount of like, not necessarily fear, but like things that propagate fear, where it's like, it's like making you afraid, and it's making you nervous, and it's making you scared of the world and not feeling like you can trust anyone. Like, that's the narrative that was coming out of all of this, like whatever we considered like the leftist mainstream news outlet, which I think a lot of people consider CNN to be news.
Right. Yeah. I personally kind of hate CNN. Yeah. Even as like a very liberal, like almost leftist kind of person.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty harmful, because it does put people in that, you know, loop of just hearing those views and not hearing anything else. But it's just, when you're using emotion to kind of grab people mm-hmm. and get them to believe things and kind of almost manipulating them in a way,
yeah,
it becomes totally wrong. Like, that's not what news is supposed to be. It's supposed to be about informing people and giving them information so that they can decide what they want to do with it. Not, I know what is right, I know what is wrong,
yeah.
Listen to me or you're gonna die.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the view that was being given.
Right, right. And it's not like COVID wasn't really serious and you shouldn't be staying in your homes.
Right.
But at the same time, you have to give people the facts, and you have to be kind of not unemotional, but there has to be some level of analytical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a political science major, yeah. and in political science, you talk about normative versus analytical
okay.
Analysis. Or normative versus...
Do you want me to look it up?
Yeah, could you?
Sure. What was that? Normative versus descriptive? Versus positive?
Descriptive, maybe.
A descriptive claim is a claim that asserts that such and such is the case. A normative claim, on the other hand, is a claim that asserts that such and such ought to be the case.
Okay, yeah. So descriptive analysis has to do more with... what is, and not taking emotions into it so much, which I think is something that we need to see more of, because really everything is normative in the news, on social media, all of it. It's just pulling on your emotions to get you to believe things.
Yeah. And I think that there's, like, a justification that, like, you know, these things need to happen, and, like, we need, you know, the last year we needed to keep people safe, and so the best
right.
way to keep people safe is to keep them scared and
yeah.
keep them in their homes. And that's wild to me that, you know, on the other hand, it makes sense, right? Like,
right.
You can see why that was the approach that they used, because fear is a very effective thing.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, so I wonder, you know, what it's going to look like as we're getting out of this and as we're getting, like, you know, because I think things have sort of made this turn. Right, and maybe
yeah.
things were sort of in this normative space beforehand, but they're really there now.
Right, it's been a progression from when Trump was elected to the everything that's happened over the past couple of years. It's just kind of built up to this really emotionally high stakes kind of environment everywhere.
Yeah. How do we get out of it?
Right,
what's
exactly.
What's the solution here?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
right. Yeah, and I mean,
I think having honest conversations is a huge part of it.
And having honest conversations with people that you disagree with is important.
Yeah, and not trying to convince them of anything.
That's key.
Because it's really easy to have a conversation with someone, and a really civil conversation with someone you disagree with, but if you're trying to convince them that your point is the right way and they are wrong, you're not going to get anywhere. You have to find a middle ground. Like, even if you're right, they have
mm-hmm.
some right points too. Like, everyone has some valid points and where they're coming from. No one's trying to be a horrible human. They're all just,
right.
they have their own experiences and their own values. And if you can't understand each other, then you're not going to get anywhere. You have to find a middle ground.
Right. I was thinking about this. We were talking about this a few days ago, where I was talking about, like, there's so many facts that surround something. An event, and you could break this down, like, super simply, right? Whether you, like, two people have an interaction, you know, and one person walks away from it thinking X happened, the other person walks away from it thinking Y happened, right?
Right.
And, like, both of those things, all of the points that they're working on are all simultaneously true, right?
Yeah.
Like, all, like, you know, a couple gets in a fight and the one person thinks that they're great and the other, you know, the other person thinks that, oh my God, this is, you know, I've made a huge mistake, we should break up. And, like, all the data points that they're using, all of their perspectives, they're both totally accurate
right.
and can exist simultaneously in a space in this, like, right? Like, it's paradoxical in nature, but it's absolutely true that, like, there's just so many facts that, like, the people that are talking on Fox News are operating, they're using literally different facts than the people that are talking on CNN. And so, like, you know, I gave the example of, like, you look at, like, when they would analyze Trump, and the people on CNN are scrutinizing him for saying something, right? And then the people on Fox are praising him for saying or doing something different, right? Like, they're not, it's not the exact same thing that they're, like, on the opposite sides of the fence on. It's, like, slightly different things.
Exactly.
And a slightly different set of facts and a slightly different perspective that are causing them to think in these ways.
Right. And, like, there's not an understanding that you're not even talking about the same thing.
Right.
Because you're just viewing the whole but only talking about part of it.
Right.
And if you don't talk about, like, you have to acknowledge that there is another side, which is kind of difficult to do at the same time.
And I think people right now are just so angry.
Yeah. There's a lot of anger.
There's so much anger. And I feel it in myself when I, like, expose myself to, like, mainstream media or, you know, certain conversations. Even, like, I'll hear things that people have to say and I find myself getting angry, which is just ridiculous. Like, that shouldn't be the case.
Right.
But it absolutely is. And I absolutely am getting angry all of the time.
Yeah. And it's really hard to find a way to kind of settle that and take an approach that is less angry. Because anger is also such a useful tool, which is hard, which is something that I know the left has argued a lot.
That they've argued in favor of anger?
Yeah, that anger is how things get done. Which is true. When you're angry, you make shit happen. Like, right? You're not going to stop until you get it your way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work in a country where you're trying to combine so many different cultures and so many different peoples. You have to, like, anger works in some, to some extent, sure. But if you just go with anger, you're going to leave you happy, but the other side angry, and they'll just do the same thing.
I mean, I wonder if you're even going to leave yourself happy. I think that oftentimes we, like, making decisions, and this is what I thought about in the last year, like, making decisions under emotional crisis is, like, the worst possible way to make decisions. Like, when you become a Navy SEAL, one of the things you do is you train out all of, like, strong emotional responses to situations. You train out, like, being really upset when something happens. Because if you're in a situation, and you're in a high-pressure situation, and there's literal death on the line, you can't let that cloud your judgment. You have to be purely analytical. You have to be purely logical. You have to be able to see, you know, even if you're upset about something, even if you're angry about it, you have to, like, look past that a little bit. And so I get concerned with this idea that we should act out of anger, because I think that you make, like, and I just know it from personal experience where, like, the things that I say to people when I'm angry at them are terrible.
Yeah.
And once I'm no longer angry, I absolutely regret saying those things. Right? Yeah. Like, there's almost zero times in which I've said something to someone while I was angry, and then later I go, oh yeah, that was definitely the right thing to say. Like, in the moment, it sure felt like the right thing to say, but afterwards, I could have been far more tactful. I could have been way more, like, just loving and kind and nice. Maybe the thing didn't even need to be said in the first place.
Right, and, like, oftentimes the thing that you're saying may be true and it may be what you feel, but that doesn't mean that it's the right thing to say.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It may be really how you feel in that moment, and maybe it's been how you felt for a long time, but saying it is not going to add any good to anything. It's not going to move whatever you wanted to forward. It's just going to put a roadblock there.
Yeah.
Because it's going to upset the other person, and then they're going to be angry, and it just begins a cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not changing anyone's mind.
No, anger very seldom changes someone else's mind, unless they're angry about the same thing as you.
Yeah. Yeah, I had an incident last week where I, like, said something to someone, and afterwards, like, maybe I didn't exactly regret it. Like, it was what you were saying, where, like, I believe the things that I said were true, and they were things that I had felt for a while, but the damage that it caused to say something like that was so substantial and just kind of heartbreaking.
Right.
And afterwards, I was hiking yesterday, and I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, like, I think we need to act out of love. Like, I think if we're guided by, you know, in whatever situation we end up in, and I'm thinking now particularly like interpersonal, just like human to human contact. When you act out of love, you almost never regret it.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're upset in a situation and you go, well, hold on. I love this person. I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to go, okay, I love them. I'm going to take a step back. I'm going to take a breath. Maybe I'll send them that. Maybe I'll say, hey, I can't talk to you right now. I love you. But I just, you know, there's a little bit here.
Right.
Like, yeah. never do you regret that. Never do you regret that.
No. Like, it's almost impossible to.
It's almost impossible to regret something when you act out of love. And even, you know, there's situations where, like, and this comes up, to, you know, in terms of, like, I always get these arguments of, like, business world and, like, you know, like how you're supposed to act in, like, these more, like, professional, like, whatever that means, professional settings or, like, but, and I think people often take that kind of, like, professional worldview and then they, like, project it onto their, like, personal lives and then they're, like, dealing with their interpersonal communications in the same way that they deal with, like, a business negotiation, which is just, and I've done this and, like, a lot of people are, you know, it's easy to do, but it's just rude. And, you know, in those situations, if instead of, like, trying to convince someone of something, instead of trying to negotiate a deal, if instead of, like, trying to explain to them how I felt in this moment and why they'd hurt me, if I just acted out of love, no way I would have regretted that ever.
Right. Yeah. No, that's definitely true. Yeah.
And so just trying to do that more. Right? Like,
right. I mean, it's a hard thing to do. It's a really hard thing to do because, I mean, our emotions kind of run our lives sometimes.
Yeah.
And to be able to take a step back and think about what is it that I really care about and really value here?
Mm-hmm.
Is it this one situation or is it this relationship and this other human that I'm interacting with or whatever the situation may be? What are my values? That's really, really hard to do.
And I think one of the things we need to think about, maybe it's societally, is like what truly makes you happy?
Yeah.
And what, maybe not even happy. Happy might even not be the right objective.
Yeah,
what truly makes you like satisfied? And like, where are you when you're at your best? And I was thinking about this recently, and I'm in a relatively great position, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not really stressed financially. I'm not really stressed, you know, in terms of a lot of, you know, work and school. Like, those kind of things aren't the major stressors on my life.
Right.
Like, those are taken care of. And yet, when I find myself in a position where, like, my interpersonal, or let's like even a better word for that, just like the interactions that I have with other people aren't like at the top of my game, when I'm not like being kind to other people, when I've said something that's unkind, like that's what eats away at me.
Yeah.
That's what makes me unhappy. And like when those relationships aren't at their best, that's when I'm miserable.
Right.
It's not because I've been dirt poor. I've had like $7 in my bank account, but the relationships in my life were amazing.
Right.
And I was happy.
Exactly, because, like, that's what really matters. It's all about the connections that you're having and the people that you care about. No matter what else is going on in your life, that's what's important for almost anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, like, those are the things you have to nurture and really take care of more so than almost anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and then yourself.
Right, and then yourself. I saw a post yesterday, someone that said if you spent, I'm going to paraphrase it, I'm going to get it wrong, but they said something like if you spent all the energy that you spend criticizing other people loving yourself, the world would be a much better place.
Oh, I like that.
And I saw that and I went, wow, that's like very simple, super simple, but like, think about that for a moment. Like, that's deeply insightful. Like, all of that time that you spend hating everyone else in the world, hating everyone who's not wearing masks, and hating like boiling rage that you feel. If instead you just flip that on its head and you go, okay, I'm just gonna love myself in this moment.
Right.
If you're gonna be, I think you're gonna be a happier person.
Right, and like, how frequently is it that you're angry with people because they're not doing what you want them to be doing? And you can do what you want to be doing. Like, you have control over that. You don't have control over literally anyone else except for yourself. And so making the decision to be doing what you want to do and what you think the world should look like, just kind of mirroring that in yourself, that's really how it works. Like, you have to create the best you, but at the same, that's complicated though at the same time, right? Because yourself is a very complicated thing, but it's about creating a community around you and yourself that is the way you want the world to look, right?
Right.
Because, I mean, if you're angry at people because, they're doing something wrong, then you do it right.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that, you know, I find myself in this situation frequently where, like, this would happen to me. This is so specific. It would happen to be in philosophy class, and we'd, like, be reading Aristotle. And we'd, like, be reading Aristotelian principles. This is so heady. I hate myself right now. We'd be reading Aristotelian principles, and I'd be, like, applying them to people in my life. And going, wow, if only this person I knew followed this Aristotelian principle, my relationship with them would be so much better. Which is, like, the shittiest way to think about everything, where I'm like, like, I'm being informed of, like, some of the most complicated, one of the, like, the best forms of human understanding that has, like, stood the test of time. And instead of, like, trying to absorb it, I'm just, like, projecting it on people in my life that I happen to, like, have an argument with that week. Like, just, it's so terrible.
Right. Yeah, but it's also, like, it's hard not to do. Mm-hmm. It's the easiest possible thing to do.
Right.
And it's hard to do it where you, kind of flipped where you're taking those principles or whatever it is that you want to be happening and do it yourself.
Right.
Like, it's really, really hard to change yourself.
It's really hard to change yourself. And I don't know. I had a friend tell me recently that he felt like I change a lot frequently. And Interesting. Have you and I had this conversation yet?
No, I don't think we have.
Okay. So, this is my buddy Quinn. And Quinn was telling me, he was like, every time I see you, Mishak, he's like, I feel like you're a different person. Like, I feel like you're evolving. And I was thinking about that. I was like, okay, that's to me, that feels like a compliment. Because right. I try to analyze my actions as best I can. I try to see what my weaknesses are. I try to shore them up. I try to see what my strengths are. I try to grow them. And I'm trying to do that constantly. And I'm failing constantly.
Of course.
But I'm also succeeding marginally, right? And so I'm succeeding enough that, like, maybe every 3 or 4 weeks whenever we talk, he said, I seem different. I seem like I was more in this direction or more in that direction or, like, following this thing. And then I was telling this to another buddy of mine, Andrew, and Andrew was saying, like, you know, I was talking about happiness, and I was talking about how I was sort of dealing with the situation at the time where I was, like, trying to figure out what was going to make me happy. And it was between, like, whether I wanted to hang out with this group of people or whether I didn't want to hang out with this group of people. That was, like, essentially the basics of it. And I was, like, charting how happy I was. And then I was, like, I was able to see, I was, like, okay, when I hang out with this group of people, it makes me this happy. And, like, the arguments that I'm having or, like, the things that aren't going well are only decreasing me this amount. And so I was, like, doing this, like, mathematical calculation in terms of, like, my happiness and well-being. And I think that that's what Quinn was talking about. I think that that's what he was, like, pointing to, is, like, I'm constantly analyzing and I'm going, okay, this isn't working. Tweak it. But when I look at myself, I am constantly so embarrassed. Like, I was looking at footage. I found footage yesterday. This was crazy. I was actually emptying the SD cards to shoot this podcast. Okay. And I was throwing them on my computer. I wanted to see if there was anything on them before I wiped them. And this one SD card, I open it up, and there's footage of my sophomore year dorm room. And I go, what is this? And I click play on it. And it was Jillian, the girl I was dating at the time. And she's saying, hello. She's, like, talking to camera. She goes, like, hello. It's, like, March 13th, 2020. We just got an email that we're being sent home.
Oh, wow.
And this went on, she talked for, like, 4 minutes, and then there was another clip afterwards where Simon and Garfunkel's playing in the background, and my friends have all come over, and we're, like, just sitting on the floor, and I just have taken my DSLR out, and I'm just, like, filming the conversation that's happening. And so I edited this together yesterday, and I sent it to my friends, but I was just thinking about it, because there were clips of me in there, and not only, like, did I look different, that's, like, a whole different thing, but, like, the way that I was talking, like, I cut out, like, sections of my dialogue from that because I was like, ooh, that was, like, a little cringy. you know, as a thing to say, or like, I'm clearly like a little irritated here, or I'm being like overly this, or I'm like overly explaining something, or I'm being kind of rude. Like, I could see it when I was watching myself.
Well, it's that just like hyper self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
It's, which it can be a good thing. It can be such a useful tool, because I have the same thing, and you can really change who you are and improve yourself in so many ways because you know what is going wrong and what is working.
Right.
But it's also so frustrating because you know what is wrong and what is working, right?
Right.
Like, knowing what is not working with yourself kind of feels like a curse.
Yeah.
Because you're aware of it, you know, but you don't know how to stop it.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you're doing, but you keep on doing it, right?
Right.
And it's so easy to just stay in that pattern, and it's really, really difficult to get out of it. And it's also easy to be in that pattern and then just get mad at yourself and, why can't I change? And I don't like the way it's working and all of that. But it can be such a useful tool, as you were saying.
And when you're totally self-aware of it, and then you fuck up, that's the worst feeling.
Oh yeah.
Like when you're like, I'm trying so hard. I've analyzed this. I know that I shouldn't say these things. And then you hear the words come out of your mouth. Like, that's just the absolute worst. I get like flashbacks to like times when I've said things that I just like, the moment they come out, I wish I could retract them. They're leaving my, like, the sentence is ending. And I'm like, just try, like, I want to just pull it back in, you know?
Yeah. No, I have the exact same thing. But it's not something you can turn off either.
Right.
It's, I don't know if it's innate or you learn it or whatever, but you have to find a way to deal with it and kind of a way to reckon with it almost. That, like, you have to give yourself the room to make those mistakes and kind of forgive yourself in a way that's really difficult to do. It's a lot easier to forgive other people, even though that's a really hard thing, than it is to forgive yourself, right?
Yeah.
But learning how to do that is probably one of the biggest life skills. You have to allow yourself to make mistakes, just as you have to allow other people to make mistakes, because that's what humans do, right? Humans are messy and complicated and don't always make the right decisions. Frequently don't make the right decisions.
Right.
They really hurt the people they love and fuck up the world, right? Like, we're the reason the world is a mess, but we're also the reason that the world is so cool. Like, without humans, sure, there would be a lot more forests and a lot of animals wouldn't be extinct and all of
that. Right.
But we also wouldn't be able to have these amazing connections that we have, and we wouldn't have learned so much as we have learned and all that humans do. Like, I don't know. This is something me and my friends talk about a lot at school, about how complicated it is just to be a human. Because we're animals, right?
Right, sure.
And, like, being an animal, we have a lot of things that we can't control.
Mm-hmm.
We're stupid and we're angry. And we were just talking about how we've been selected for these maybe not great traits, right?
Like, aggression in the wild to, find mates and kill, you know, the predators that are
You want to have
camp.
You want to have the male mate that's going to kill off whoever attacks you and your little clan. But at the same time, we've overcome that so much. Like, just think about the incredible art that humans have made. That's one of my favorite things to think about.
Right.
Like, and the wide variety of it, too. Because we're so complicated, there's so much room for us to do really whatever we want.
Sure.
We have so much choice, even though we don't have all choice in everything. There's so much choice in what we can do. And every little choice changes the way that the world works and the way that you are as a person. Like you were saying, like, every choice that I make, and I'm pretty aware of most of them, I can see how it affects me and affects the world around me. And it's that butterfly effect of everything I do changes the world. Every tiny little thing.
Every tiny little thing.
Right? And, like, just the amount of influence that we have that we're unaware of. Like, one of our parents' favorite films is, what's the name of it?
The Christmas movie with Jimmy Stewart.
It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
It's a Wonderful Life. And it's all about how just one person totally changes everything around mm-hmm. them. And we have so much power in that, but it's something that's really hard to deal with and really hard to both see, and then once you do see it, to kind of just figure out how to control. And you can't control it, right? There's no way to ever control it, but you can really make a real difference with that. You can decide who you are and what you want to be, to some extent at least.
Yeah. That's a tough thing to reckon with, right? To realize, like, the impact that you have on other people. And I think that frequently that's downplayed in terms of, like, what it actually... Because it's huge. It's massive.
And, like, on the flip side, the impact that other people have on you. Like...
Yeah. Like, that determines everything. Like, my social interactions or my mood state is nearly completely dependent on the quality of the social interactions that I'm having.
Right. And it can be, like, tiny little things. Things, yeah. Like, you hear one person in the cafeteria say one little thing that knocks you off balance, and then you're upset for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Or it can be that your friend says one little nice thing, and you're in an amazing mood, and you then kind of expand that and add to the good in the world, right?
Yeah. I heard something somewhere that said that a negative comment is worth 5 positive comments.
Wow.
That, like, when you get knocked down, it takes about 5 times as much to pull you back up.
Right, which makes sense.
It totally makes sense. I mean, I think about that all the time. We're like, one little thing, and then you're, like, bummed out for a week.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, one poor interaction with, like, a stranger, and the rest of your day is shit. It's just ruined, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody cuts you off in traffic, and you're mad for an hour and a half. Like, there's, like, all of these, like, little things. And, I mean, I wonder, I've always wondered this, but just, like, how much choice do we really have in terms of, like, our general mood in situations? So I was, like, analyzing this, and, like, I've had times where just, like, there's been a, like, let's call it a bad month, where just, like, things don't seem to be going well.
Right.
But then afterwards, when I look at the bad month, I go, what really wasn't going well in this month? And to me, it seems like the things that weren't going well were, like, I didn't want to be in the situations that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the situations were bad. It was not that the situations were, like, harmful to me or something. It's just, like, I had enough hubris to think that I had something better to do in those situations. And so I wonder, like, how much of it, I remember just vividly, went to the grocery store one time with a group of friends. And for whatever reason, I didn't want to be going to the grocery store. I was, like, mad about something else. And the entire time I was in the grocery store, I was just furious. I was furious at everyone. I was furious at everything. I was, like, mad at how destructive every single thing in the grocery store was on the environment. Like, I just saw all of the packaging just, like, being consumed by, like, you know, animals in the ocean and just dying. Like, that was, like, the images that I was having as I'm, like, fuming up and down the aisles trying to find the peanut butter. And, like, so, like, I wonder how much of that was just, you know, everyone else was having a jovial, great time at the grocery store. Like, how much of my bad afternoon was me, and how much agency do I really have to control that? Because in the moment, it felt like it was zero. It felt like I had absolutely no control. I was having a shitty day. I was going to have a shitty day. I might as well just live through it, suck it up, and it's, you know. But is it possible? Because I've also been in situations like that where I go in ahead of time, where I know, like, okay, I'm in a little bit of a grumpy mood, and I can tell that that's starting to percolate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna have a good time. I'm no matter what, I'm gonna have a good time. I'm gonna put a smile on my face. I'm gonna have a good time. 10 minutes later, I'm having a great time.
Right. Well, it's just that, I mean, with most things, but especially with emotion and stuff like that, if you start one thing, you'll do it again. It's just, it becomes a cycle. So if you start with the negative, you'll get the negative again. You'll stay in the negative. But if you move to the positive, if you can switch it, even just a little bit, you can start going towards that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it may not be, I don't think control is the right word here.
Okay.
Because I'm a very emotional person. I've got a lot of emotions, and I don't control them. I can't control them. But it's about learning how to move with the wave of it.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I think of emotions as kind of a wave that goes over you. It's like the ocean. But being able to stick your head up the surface And sometimes the wave goes over you, and sometimes you feel like you're drowning, but it's being able to just get a little bit above the surface, then it's a lot easier, right? Like, once you can breathe a little bit of air,
right,
then you can hold your breath a little longer underneath, right?
Yeah.
You can make it a little farther. You can change the situation a little bit more to the good. And it's about just taking these tiny little steps. And it's really hard to do when you're stuck in that emotion, right?
Yeah.
Especially with something like anger or sadness or something like so visceral. And it's so easy to just stay underwater and be like, okay, this is what is happening and I am here and there is nothing I can do about it. And sure, that's the easiest solution. And it's not really a solution, but it's the easiest thing to do.
Right.
But if you really decide that that's not okay anymore, you're like, okay, well, this doesn't work anymore. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to go slightly more positive. I'm going to have a good interaction with one person. Then that interaction feeds into the positive, right?
Yeah.
And once you feed into the positive, you have more positive energy. And you can be like, well, I can have maybe two good interactions this time, right? Yeah. And it just builds and builds. It's about being able to, like, grab onto the good, even when you're stuck in the bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's so important, right? It is about finding the good.
Right.
And it's not about, like, suppressing the bad. And no. I've done, like, this in the past where, like, I'll be upset. And so I'm like, all right, I'm going to run this out of me. I'm going to, like, put on my shoes. I'm going to go outside. I'm going to run as hard as I can. And, like, two miles in, I'm, like, stopping and panting, and I'm having the worst run of my life because you can't just, like, smush it down.
Or you can't
just, like, get it out of you in that way. There has to be something positive.
And you have to allow whatever the bad is to do whatever it's going to do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. It's going to be there, but if you can cling to a little bit of good, yeah, then you're fine.
And if you're not lashing out at other people with that bad.
Right, because then you're just building it up, yeah, right? You're just putting yourself into a hole.
Yeah. And that's what I was wondering about the love thing, is if, like, it would be possible to create some sort of, like, not quite a wake-up call. What was I going to call it? But, like, an anchor point.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, when you're in a situation where you're really upset and you're really angry and you want to say something to someone, like, what is the memory or what is the thing that you can, maybe it's a photograph, maybe it's a 30-second video that you have on your phone, and whether it's, like, your spouse or your mother or your sibling or your father or whomever else in your life that you're, like, interacting with to such a high degree where, like, this is prone to happen, right?
Right.
What is the one thing you can just call on? And, like, go, okay, I'm gonna watch this video clip of them at, like, my, you know, 12th birthday.
Right.
And then you go, okay, wait, hold on. I'm gonna take a breather. I'll go get a glass of water. I'm gonna go for a walk. I'm gonna cool down a little bit. Like, if I wonder if it would be helpful for us to have these anchor points, you know, just
right,
as a way to not only prevent negative interaction towards someone, not only prevent, like, saying something you're gonna regret, but cultivating love and empathy.
Right. It's almost like, yeah, I mean, I've never thought about it before. I really like that. But it's, you're giving yourself the positive. You're reminding yourself of the fact that whatever you're absorbed in at the moment is not all that there is.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's really easy to, when you're in a moment, for that moment to be the whole world.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like, it's nothing exists outside of that, but it does. And logically, you always are, you know, that it exists. There's so much that is outside of that moment. But being able to kind of grasp that and find what is outside and bring it in with you and be like, okay, so there is more than this. And maybe I just need to let this go away before I can deal with the situation. Right?
Yeah.
Just let it go over me, let it go through, and once it's over, then I'll deal with this. Then I'll know how I want to react in this situation in a way that's not going to harm me and it's not going to harm somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about times when the emotion is so strong.
Yeah.
That it's really, really tough to have any perspective, when it lasts for like days,
mm-hmm.
And really has negative ramifications. I remember, I called you and I told you about this,
mm-hmm.
When I was getting the tattoo on my foot.
Oh yeah.
So a buddy of ours, or a buddy of mine, you mm-hmm. know him as well. He was doing tattoos on people,
right.
Really safely. He had a whole system to do it, and the needles were very sterile, and there no concerns on that end. And I was the last person in the line of people to get a tattoo, and I wanted to get it on my foot, and I wanted it to be done. I wanted a little camera on my mm-hmm. foot, and so I go in to do it. And beforehand, I was like, you know, this might hurt a little bit. It might hurt a little bit for this to be done on my foot. And I had like a chocolate edible that like a buddy of mine had given me.
Right.
And I was like, I'll take this chocolate edible. It's just a little bit. And maybe it'll like lessen the pain mm-hmm. slightly. And I took the edible and I go in and he does the first prick. And nothing has hurt more. I thought he struck a nerve. It like went in. I could feel the skin like popping uh-huh. as he like drew the needle out of my foot. And he can tell I'm in like a ton of pain, like a ton of pain. And he does, so it's like a little camera box, and he mm-hmm. does like the first like line down and over. It's just like the first pass. And at this point, there's like I'm just shaking with pain.
Right.
And he's like, I think we need to stop. And or I maybe even I said, I think you need to stop. I think we need to take a break from this. And I took a break, and it hurts so bad. It hurts so bad. And everyone else had gotten theirs, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
One other person had gotten them on their foot, but, no real big deal.
Right.
And I left the space where everyone was, and I went out and I went to go see some other friends. And I came back and I saw him and another buddy of mine, and they started like picking fun at me
mm-hmm.
for like not being able to get the tattoo. They're like, wow, you really pussied out on that tattoo. You really couldn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of laughing. I'm kind of laughing a little bit with them. And I just remember feeling so, so embarrassed. And I left, my friend and I eventually, I went back and we left and we were talking back in my room. And I just remember being just like so deeply embarrassed that it was like almost depression.
Yeah.
It was like almost depressed levels of embarrassment where I was so sad. I was so upset. I was so disappointed in myself that I couldn't get this thing done. This like simple, simple thing. I couldn't get a needle pricked in my foot. Like, what's wrong with me? What's going on? And that embarrassment, like, and then the subsequent anger that I felt toward the people that had picked fun at me, like, didn't go away.
Right.
It didn't go away 2 days later. It didn't go away 3 days later. It didn't go away a week later. Like, still when I think about that, like, the embarrassment and the anger that I felt with that is so high that it's actually had damaging effects on my relationships.
Right. Yeah. And it's, right, and, like, what are you supposed, like, it's so hard because you're supposed to grab something, right?
Yeah.
You're supposed to get yourself out of it, but when it hits a nerve, it's really easy to, instead of grabbing something else, grab onto it. Grab onto the anger mm-hmm. and the embarrassment. And if you hold on to that and have that be the thing that you're clutching and onto for dear life, then you can't grab anything else, right? You can't get yourself out of it until it finally fades away, which can take a really long time or never, right? Even... maybe there's just a small chunk that's still there. You're still holding on to it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's... when you cling on to a negative emotion, you can't cling on to the positive.
And embarrassment is so corrosive.
Embarrassment is one of the worst ones. I have personally said, like, the worst emotion for me is probably embarrassment. When I was like, 11 or 12, I decided I would never be embarrassed again.
Okay. That's a bold choice.
Yeah, so I just... and it kind of worked.
Okay.
So whenever I want or felt like I would be embarrassed or should be embarrassed, I said, no, I'm not.
Mm.
Which, I mean, it doesn't entirely work because then it just kind of festers a little bit. But it works for a lot of things, with embarrassment especially. Like, just saying, okay, but not right now.
Yeah.
Or at least not so much, right? Like, maybe a little bit. I can feel a little embarrassed, but not, it's only a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not entire. It's not going to overtake me or anything. But at the same time, like, that hasn't worked for me forever. I get embarrassed and it annoys the hell out of me and I can't get out of it and all of that. But I mean, it's such a hard thing to deal with, because that's the thing, is you cling to it.
Yeah.
Because it feels like that's all there is.
It totally feels like that's it. That's the only thing there.
Right. Exactly. And when you feel like that's all that there is, then there's, how are you supposed to see anything else? Right.
Right.
You have to acknowledge that there is something else in order to find something else, if that makes sense.
Yes. Right. You have to acknowledge that there's more out there in the world than just this really strong emotion that you happen to be feeling right now and you can't seem to be able to get over.
Right. Right. And the hardest part is when you can acknowledge that and can see it, but say, I don't care.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
Like, because that's something I struggle with, is when I'm so caught and clung to an emotion, when I see the outside world, but say, I don't care, this is it. That's right. When you really get stuck.
That, like, the thing that you're experiencing right now is the only thing that matters.
Right. And it's about letting it, like, everyone always says, let go of your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, honestly, that is what it's about. Right. It's about being able to and learning how to do that, at least a little bit.
Yeah, that letting go. Which is tough. And especially when, you know, it's tough in those situations, right? That we mm-hmm. just talked about, where like you are feeling something towards somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's also really tough when you feel like you've hurt someone with that.
Yeah.
And I know I've been in those situations, and that's a toughie. That's a really big toughie to get past, where it's like, I did this thing and I know that I hurt them. And maybe they even told me that I hurt them. And it just stings.
Right. And it starts to eat away at you, because you know what you did was wrong and you want to take it back, but you can't.
You can't. And especially, like, if you can't really apologize, like, if it, you right. know, like, an apology just doesn't cut it for whatever the thing that you did. And yeah, you're just wishing, you're just hoping that if the world could only turn the clock back an hour, that everything would be okay.
Right. Exactly. And it can't. But... But you have to find a way to move forward.
And I think this all wraps back to the cancel culture thing.
Right.
It all wraps back to this idea that, like, you know, we've been, like, putting people on pedestals and then we kick them off the pedestal and then they fall really far. You yeah. know, like, if I say something bad, if I say something obnoxious or rude or just upsetting, you know, my friends are going to call me out on it, hopefully, mm-hmm. hopefully. And if I say something personal, maybe they're going to be a little irritated for a while, as they should be.
Right.
But we take these, like, figures and we prop them up and we say, these are near demigods, whether mm-hmm. they're political figures or whether they're, you know, actors or whatever, these, like, strong public figures. And then they do something and they screw up a little bit, marginally, generally speaking.
Right.
Because the ones that really screw up, we all agree. You know,
right.
the like, Bill Cosbys and the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, we all agree, are terrible pieces of shit. Like, nobody is sitting here going, let's uncancel Harvey Weinstein. Like, that's not
what we're talking about, right?
That's not the problem here, right? Like, everyone's going, okay, yeah, that's, yeah, terrible human being. Don't rape people. That's bad.
Right.
But when we're dealing with people that maybe said something offensive, you know?
Right.
Or they, like, talked about something that was misinformation.
Right.
Or they, like, you know, what, or, like, little stuff yeah. that it really, it's like, you're taking these people that are no different than you or I,
mm-hmm.
really, like, actually.
Yeah.
But they've just been propped up, and then you just shove them over.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you're holding them to a much higher standard than you would anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta think about these people as you would your friend or whatever. Would you expect your friend to never do that?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's something that you would, then sure, maybe they have done something really wrong. But if it's something that your friend or your family member or yourself might do,
yeah,
then they probably just made a mistake, right? Like, we all make mistakes.
And that's the thing, is that there's now no room for mistakes.
Exactly. Right. And, like, that doesn't work. Right? Like, how are you? You can't be a human with no room for mistakes. It just doesn't work because we all make mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. They're a part of life.
Mistakes are the default. I feel like we're right. always making mistakes, and occasionally we get it right.
Exactly, right? Like, it's a lot easier to make a mistake, and they just happen, and we don't have control over it. And even when we're trying our absolute best, mm-hmm. we're never going to be perfect. That's not how we're built.
No, and we imagine, I think, that these people, you know, these elevated people in our society are somehow more benevolent or better than us or better at doing this because they have this power. Like, that's total bullshit.
No.
They, you know, just because you have a million followers on Instagram doesn't make you any more empathetic or kind. It right. just, it genuinely doesn't.
In fact, it might do the opposite. Yeah. Like, with having all those eyes on you, like, I honestly feel so bad for celebrities. I never want to be rich and famous. That is kind of my worst nightmare. Who would want to have the whole world watching your every move?
Scrutinizing everything.
Everything you do. And one little mistake, one little misstep, and you're gone.
Yeah. And sometimes they're not even missteps, right? Like, sometimes it's just, like, they have an opinion that you happen to disagree with.
Right. And maybe they didn't express it in the best way.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And maybe they've been pushing it down for so long, and it comes up in a way that isn't good. Mm-hmm. But it's not, it doesn't mean they're a horrible human.
Yeah.
It means they're a normal human, because that's what humans do. Like, humans, we're messy.
Yeah.
Like, we're not meant to be demigods, and our celebrities aren't either. They're just people.
They're just people. They're really just people. I remember I was telling you, did I tell you this? I was listening to the Rob Lowe podcast for a while, and I found myself just, like, kind of becoming, I don't know, I was, like, disinterested, and I was like, why am I disinterested in the show? And I realized, eventually, there was an interview with David Spade, and he's talking to David Spade, and David Spade talks about, like, losing his watch in LA, and, like, that was the whole story.
Hmm.
And I'm like, oh, this, you know, so-and-so happened, and oh, and then eventually we found it. And I was like, this is the exact same story as my buddy Sam losing his keys. Like, it's the exact same story. The stakes are a little higher. Everything's a little bit more expensive. But really and truly, it's the same story.
Right.
And so it's like this, like, weird thing where we expect them to be these, like, larger-than-life figures, and they're not. They're not at all.
Right. Like, parts of their lives are glamorous, sure, and they have more money and fancier clothes, but, like, their day-to-day interactions aren't necessarily all that cool and glamorous and fancy, right? Like, they're still going to have normal human interactions and live normal lives and have, not normal lives.
Just, like, a lot of money, yeah.
Right, exactly. And, like, they're going to have human emotions, and they're going to get caught in those emotions just like we do, because that's what we all do.
Right.
They're no different than anyone else.
Yeah. And so I find myself, and getting irritated is not the right thing to do, but I do find myself getting irritated with people that try to, like, elevate these celebrities and go, you know, they shouldn't be doing this because of this. Like,
because they have a platform. Because
they have a platform, and right.
And, like, sure, they should be conscious about what they're posting.
But can you imagine the kind of pressure that they're under? Can you imagine?
No way.
Absolutely not. Like,
right. Like, my 400 and whatever followers, that's enough pressure for me, right? Like, I don't need 400,000. Like,
right. It's just, it's ludicrous. And there's never been a time in history where so many people have had so much influence.
Right. I mean, this is totally unprecedented. It's, the internet is, it has a lot of good, but it's such a, I don't know, a monster that you can have contact with nearly everyone in the world. Not everyone, but, like,
yeah.
a large...
It's like half the world now,
half
yeah.
the world. Like that.
Yeah. Right.
You can express your view or make some statement, and the world knows. And, like, I don't know, I feel like that should be illegal, basically. Right, like, nobody should have that much power and that much influence.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how to deal with that.
No.
And we can't really blame people if they don't know how to deal with it, because who would? It doesn't.
Who would?
It's way too much pressure.
Way too much.
Yeah.
Way too much pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts. It's really nuts. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the solution is, and I don't know what we do. But it's just curious to me how, you know, it feels like little empathy we have mm-hmm. for people in these situations, and how we're not willing to give them a second chance. How we've sort of omitted the second chance that, like, you screw up once, that's it, you're out, you're done.
Right.
And we have to have space for people to screw up.
Right. Yeah. Because
no matter who you are.
Exactly. Everyone should have space to make mistakes and to make wrong decisions and to hurt some people, because we're all going to.
We're all going to. Like you said before, we're all humans, and we're all just, you know, I was talking about this yesterday, that, like, our neurobiology hasn't changed really for 20,000 years. Like, we have the same brains that we did when we lived in caves and had to fight off, like, animals that were going to try to, like, eat our children. Like, that's where our heads are at. That's what our heads are evolved to. And we're here with, like, this tiny little brick in our pocket that can access everything in the world. Like, that's ludicrous. That's lunacy. Can you imagine? It's craziness. It's absolute insanity.
It's only in the last, whatever, 30 years?
Yeah.
I mean, not even that.
Yeah, it's like everyone's been handed a lightsaber and they keep turning it on and shooting themselves in the foot. Like, it's like nobody knows how to control these, like, beautiful things that we all have that can be weapons, that can be tools, that can be, like, it's so new. It's brand new. It's brand spanking new. And everyone, you know, we believe that we have control over it. And especially people like you and I who never grew up without the internet. Like, our entire lives, we've had the internet. And it just seems like that's what the world is like.
Right.
That's what the world is. You know, and it's not, and it's not at all.
No, it really is not. Yeah. I mean, I do wish the internet doesn't exist, but it's also, it can be such a tool for amazing things.
It's also so cool. It's so freaking cool.
Yeah, and you have to see the good in it, right? Because we don't have control over it. None of us can decide where it goes. Yeah. But finding the little gems of good, that's the most important part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Edie, thank you for being on the show today. I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, I did too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. We'll have to have you on another episode at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Awesome. All right, let's go get some lunch. I'm hungry.
Okay, me too. Sounds good.
All right.